My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to another episode of the Inside United podcast. Today, our guest is Aaron Dean. He works here as an instructor at ABC. He is the Dean of Students, but he's also international advisor. And with Aaron Dean, we work closely in managing the multi-structured and diverse international work. And so what has prompted this podcast has been events that Aaron Dean was very much involved with China, and also with China being in the news and progressively important in the news. And the fact that just earlier this month, China celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Communist Party, which was in the newspapers all around the world. Aaron Dean traveled to China at a very, very historic time with Herbert Armstrong, with whom he had a very, very special relationship. He was his assistant, confidant. He started off as being a steward on the plane that carried Mr. Armstrong around the world and traveled with him around the world. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Kubik. It's a pleasure to be here with you and talk about the past. We don't live in the past, but of course, if you don't follow what the past did, you don't learn from it.
So set us up with, you know, how you were involved with this, how you got to some of these places.
Mr. Armstrong asked me to fly on his G2 immediately after my graduation from Ambassador College. He was visiting, why was he visiting world leaders? Obviously, he read in the Bible, the gospel has to go to the world and then shall the end come. We're getting close to the end. So therefore he needed to go see these world leaders and tell them about the kingdom of God. So that was his all-encompassing purpose. And he was dynamic in doing so to the extent that in 1975, we were out of the country 312 days. I went to the airplane logs and looked it up. 312 days. That's most of the year. And that didn't include some of the church visits we did in the United States. So he was a consummate traveler in trying to get the job done, which he saw as his commission. Obviously, he died since then, so there's other ways to look at that. But I, you know, all the apostles, they did their best to get the gospel out there, and he did his best as well to get it out there. And United Church of God is carrying that same work.
Well, he certainly is one that was not afraid to speak very directly about what the gospel was, just as the Apostle Paul, whether he spoke to crowds in the Philippines or whether he spoke to Rotary clubs or even in China at a very dark moment. In 1984, one of his communications, 2 years before he died, he talked about his visit to China that was broadcast around the entirety of the nation, where 200 million people saw it in the news. So tell us more about the background of some of this, about the trips, and how this, what it means for us today.
Well, it actually, his traveling started in 1968 when he met with King Leopold, who had seen an envoy and requested a visit. It went really well. He and the king became really good friends. And the king asked him if he would go down to Singapore and to Indonesia to visit, because the king had a foundation for the conservation of nature. And he had written several books about it. Mr. Armstrong was doing a series on evolution at the time, and the king had beautiful photographs of all these different animals. So he went and he saw Prime Minister Lee of Singapore and Suharto of Indonesia in 69-70, and then continued those visits. He realized, well, maybe God's opening these doors so that he can preach the gospel to the world. And so he started visiting, and he visited Japan. And we had a man named Osamu Goto, who actually taught Japanese at the college, was well-connected in Japan, and introduced Mr. Armstrong to the emperor of Japan. And he didn't want him to meet anyone else in Japan till he met the emperor, because whoever you meet, that's the status you carry. So when he met the emperor, then everyone in Japan knew of him. And he had some 10 Japanese diet members who he became close to, called themselves the Japanese Sons. They were never in the church or anything, but they wanted to take him different places. So he began going, and often some of them would travel with him. His initial thing with China actually wasn't in 1979, the first trip there, or 84, the second trip there. His actual visit request came from the Chinese ambassador to Ethiopia. Now, Mr. Armstrong was there in the early 70s meeting with Haile Selassie, who was the emperor of Ethiopia, traced his roots to King David through Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. And Mr. Armstrong, of course, traced his ancestry back to David. And so they had something in common. And while the Japanese were there, he was there with Mr. Yamaguchi, who was the labor minister of Japan. And they were doing some projects in Japan with the government. And so the Chinese ambassador liked what Mr. Armstrong said and invited him to come to China. Well, the Chinese called back to the ambassador and refused to admit him. They said, no, we're not letting him come in, because in the early years of the Plain Truth, Mr. Armstrong was you know, writing all these articles, and he was writing against communism because they were anti-God and atheists. And so because of those articles, they said, no, we're not going to let him come. Now, he had not really written anything about it for several years, and not since then. He really realized that the message is a message of hope. It's a message about the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
It's not a message about anti-communism, anti-socialism, anti-democracy, anti, you know, whatever. All the world's governments are wrong. And so he really, at that point, changed his approach to much more of what he used was the unseen hand that mm-hmm. has to come in. Time magazine said that, you know, it won't be peace unless some unseen hand intervenes.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided that was kind of his lead-in to proclaim a message of that unseen hand that's going to happen.
So it was a political message. It was not involving himself with the politics, pro and con. It was promoting a new government, promoting something biblical that was outside the realm of the politics of this world.
Absolutely. It's almost like the Apostle Paul saying, this God that you have no name, the unseen God, that's the same God that Mr. Armstrong preached. In that sense. And so it opened doors for him. And that's when he became the ambassador without portfolio, because he didn't represent any government on earth, not the United States. But he was friends with a number of people there. Of course, he was invited to the White House. President Reagan was California governor, so he knew of Mr. Armstrong, because Pasadena was the headquarters of the Worldwide Church of God, which Mr. Armstrong was over. And so he knew people, but he didn't represent the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't any political problems that way. And it's very unusual if you're not a diplomat or representative of a country to go to a country, which is why it was so surprising that he was invited to China, you know, a Christian leader to go into a country. Nixon had opened it up in the early 70s. Finally, they just opened barely. They'd isolated themselves from the world after Mao Zedong, you know, the revolution, et cetera. So Mr. Armstrong was invited as the first religious leader to ever go. Now, it was surprising he even got to go, because he had his heart attack in the mid-70s, and he was supposed to die. He actually did quit breathing. They had to bring him back. And the doctor is funny, because the doctor would ask, will I ever be able to write again? And the doctor said, well, oh, yes, you will. And then he turned back to all of us, a few of us there at his home, and say he'll never write again. I mean, he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a few months later, he was writing articles. And then the doctor would be visiting, and he asked, will I ever be able to travel again? And the doctor said, oh, yeah, yes, Mr. Armstrong, you'll be able to travel. He'd turn back to us and say, he'll never travel again, not at his age. I mean, he's 86, 87 years old at the time, and he's going to die. Well, by 1979, January, the receivership hit the church. California tried to take over the church. And Mr. Armstrong was in Tucson, where he was living at the time. And he ran the church from there, so that he was out of state. So that they managed to settle the receivership after 3 months to get the people that tried to take over the church out. And at that time is when he was invited to China to go there. So we left in late November 79. I think we arrived in China the first or second day of December of 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were met by some diplomats. They had a limousine for Mr. Armstrong. And for the crew, of which I was at that time, they had a brand new, I think it was a 1956 Oldsmobile, because they had sold all the molds. Our old molds had gone to China, and they were manufacturing new old cars, which was fun to see this car that you hadn't seen for 40 years, and you're riding in it, and it's brand new, pretty much. So, and we told them we were crew, but they said, this is China. Everyone's equal. You all go. So it didn't make any difference whether you were a steward on the plane, the captain of the plane, the president of the organization, everybody on the plane, we're all equal, even though we realized no one is ever all equal, no matter what the form of government is. But we were all invited to everything and it kind of command performance to go.
How many days were you there?
We were there about a week, I believe.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And we stayed in the government guest house. I think it was called Dionysius or something. I still have some of the stationery. Mm-hmm. Took a few souvenirs with me, the kind that were legal to take. Mm-hmm. And so if I would remember the name, I could go back through my files and find that. But it was a wonderful experience to be invited to go there and to fly directly in. We'd gone to Tokyo and stayed there a few days and then on to China, to Beijing after that. And that first trip, that's the only city we visited was Beijing. Later, we went to Shanghai and other places. But it was an experience, and it was all bicycles. There were very few cars, just basically government cars and a few type taxis. There was hardly any tourism, so hotels weren't built. And so there wasn't you didn't need an infrastructure of travel and transportation because of that.
My, how things have changed.
Oh, they have incredibly changed. And again, prophecy, Mr. Armstrong, he knew, I mean, you got a quarter of the world's population here and the gospel has to go to the world, so it has to reach them. And how do you do that in a closed country? And, you know, normally you look at that and think it's going to be decades and decades before they can even approach what you could reach there.
So here you come and you sit down with these important people. How do you start talking about these subjects? I mean, you were there, Aaron. I mean, you heard it all. It was Mr. Armstrong coming there to preach the gospel to the world. And now he has an audience of...
Yeah, with top of leaders.
With the top leaders and then whatever the leaders want to tell the public in their newspapers. So what did you talk about? What exactly were the conversations like?
They started off with some lower level people. They had the education department was actually the ones who hosted because we had Ambassador College and the foundation and the church, all three. And so he was going to meet, and he did eventually meet with Mr. Tanzen Lin, who was the vice chairman. He was one of the top three people in the country. They had the chairman and then a couple others. He was a contemporary of Zhou Enlai and Mao Zedong. And so, but that wasn't the initial meeting. We went to the education meeting, met with some people there, and talked about the same thing he was going to talk about, that the governments of this world would eventually end with the return of Jesus Christ to take over. And that's when we'd have peace. We wouldn't fight the political things. He talked about Europe, that Europe would unite and get together. And the Chinese were very concerned about Russia and also what would happen with them because they didn't have they had a million man army, you know, 100 million man army, but they did not have any of the weapons or the modern things. I mean, you know, you don't stand up well against a missile when you got your rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were afraid of Russia. And so that was some of the conversation. Also, they wanted us to tour a few things. So they actually put us on the bus. We went up to the Great Wall of China and saw the section that they repaired, which looks really nice. Of course, the thousands of miles of dilapidated wall is there. And it was fun to see the wall. And it was interesting. We were in cars and there were a couple of tour buses. They just had a few tourists, Americans, you know, just within the last year or so, had a few tour groups there. And we were at the Great Wall, and Mr. Armstrong had his hand up looking at the wall. And this bus goes by, and everybody's waving and looking and taking pictures because they recognized Mr. Armstrong from the TV broadcast back in the United States. And so they were fascinated by that. Of course, Mr. Armstrong at the time was 87 years old, and he couldn't walk the Great Wall. He saw parts of a little bit there. And we stayed there long enough. The rest of us walked up the several hundred yards of it, up and down. And one of the funniest things to me, though, was the restroom. I had to go to the restroom, and it was fairly large. By the stone floor and a wall there where you would go. And then they had some stalls back there, and they had these little metal pins that stood up. And I didn't know what those are for, and I went there to go. And all of a sudden, you heard this massive rush of water. And you had to jump up and stand up on those pins because flush it, they just flooded the whole floor with water. And if you weren't on those pins, you were going to be ankle deep in water.
That's efficient.
Efficient. One flush does the whole restroom. Yeah. And that was interesting. On the way back from the Great Wall of China, they were building a large bridge. It was probably, you know, a quarter mile across this valley. And I was fascinated because they'd filled in this canyon with dirt. And then they had dug into the dirt for arches and then laid the arches on the dirt, the stone arches. Of course, the weight of the arch holds it together.
Yeah.
And then they built all the arches, then they dug the dirt out from under the arches.
And voila, a bridge.
Yeah, and then they had a bridge. And I thought, well, it wouldn't be easier with equipment. They said, no, we have a billion people. We need the jobs. So they hired people to haul dirt in. They hired people to put blocks in, to dig it out for the blocks. Then they haul people to dig the dirt out from under the blocks, and you have a bridge where we would have, you know, some equipment and 100 men and do the whole same thing. But their philosophy was, how do we keep everybody busy and employed?
Mm-hmm.
And so the streets were clean because they had people sweeping streets, people that, but everybody got assigned a job. They didn't have the freedoms that they're starting to get now with the communist form of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I asked, you know, why did you do it? And it's just jobs. We need the jobs. Like I said, to see how far back they were in technology and things at the time and what they needed to do to advance.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you're wondering, how in the world is this? You know, you look at Gog and Magog and the different prophecies and Revelation, and how does China catch up to do that?
Even when I went there for the first time in 1993, it was just factories.
Bicycles.
Factories from the West, you know, some of the big names of tennis shoes, you know, that had special economic zones, and they were just beginning to kind of come out of that. But the meteoric rise from that, from bicycles to being a power economic that's rivaling the United States. And you talked about how they're afraid of Russia, but right now Russia is afraid of China because China has four times the population of Russia. It's nuclear and it has aircraft carriers. It has a space program. It has all the advances of the Western world. And while Russia had the Communist Party start back in 1917, it collapsed after 70 years. The Chinese started it in 2021, and they're as strong as ever and as determined as ever to continue that philosophy.
And that was the thing that Mr. Armstrong knew, and that's why he talked about it. In fact, his meeting with the vice chairman. Vice chairman obviously been briefed on what he had said in the other meetings. And they had a banquet for Mr. Armstrong the night before, and with a whole bunch of government officials, all different cabinet ministers and things, almost all Chinese. But when he met with the vice chairman, Tenzin Lin, he met for an hour with him. And the whole thing was a geopolitical conversation. So he had heard what Mr. Armstrong said, because he told him, he says, yeah, Europe needs to be stronger, and they're not united. And Mr. Armstrong said, well, they're going to be. Prophecy says that there'll be a United States of Europe and they'll be united. Of course, all that's happened and come to pass since then. And like I said, his concern was Russia. And if Russia would attack, you know, the muscles, they could take them out. And of course, like you said, Chinese technology, they have all our technology now and they can go the other way. That was his whole discussion, is how's this going to happen? And he was fascinated by the fact that that was going to be how it, of course, Mr. Armstrong didn't get to the end of the story where everybody blows everybody up and Christ returns right before we all die. But just the standpoint, the fact that it said they were going to get together and unite as a continent was great news for them, because that would be someone that the Russians would be looking at to worry about rather than the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave the Chinese their 30 or 40 years to be where they are now. So the chairman was impressed and asked him to go to the Peking Theater that night. And so that night we went to the Peking Theater, and we saw it was kind of a semi-ballet cultural thing. They had the banners they were waving and all the dances and some acrobatics and various things. Beautiful, very well done. Of course, the Chinese are excellent gymnasts and dancers. And after the show, Mr. Armstrong asked, you know, them to come to Ambassador Auditorium in Pasadena and perform. And because of the foundation, the Ambassador National Cultural Foundation, we were always trying to get people to come. We had an ongoing battle with the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
They were very jealous of our auditorium. Of course, ours would only seat a third of the number of people theirs would. And they actually made a decree that if anybody performed for us, they couldn't perform in the pavilion.
Hmm.
And so we had an ongoing problem with that. But for us to be able to invite these people to our auditorium, eventually broke that wall, because we started bringing the better people. Pavarotti performed at our auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to say Pavarotti can't perform in their auditorium? And so bringing that Chinese group there helped us. in that we were able to bring them and actually sponsor them and take them to the other cities as well. And it was through the exchanges is how we managed to build our concert series in Pasadena.
Well, tell me more about their first trip over to the U.S. and at our auditorium.
They brought the troupe, the people. We housed some of them at the college and some in hotels. And our stage was fairly small, so they had to kind of bring it in a little bit from what they normally did. But they were very impressed. I mean, they loved the acoustics. If anyone who'd ever been in the Ambassador Auditorium, every seat in the house had perfect acoustics. It was a miracle. In fact, the people that built it were surprised at how, I mean, you actually tuned the building like an instrument. Mm-hmm. It had skids on the roof that you could angle and change. And so they were super impressed with that. In fact, it was the best place they played. And then from there, they just did commercial flights to the other cities that we had set up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had built a name for the series. Now, it wasn't just religion. God is about art, about culture. It's a way of life. You know, obviously there's sin and repentance and that aspect of it. But God's way of life is a wonderful thing. And so to bring talented people that can actually perform and do things is a great thing. And so that was what came out of our first visit to China.
Yeah, this is very, very fascinating because, Aaron, these things happened 40-some years ago.
Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe.
And you kind of get a little bit fuzzy because I was a pastor reading about this in the worldwide news. And, you know, you read about it, but you don't put it all together. But I feel like there's significance to what we did.
It helped us in the fact that it helped our cultural center and bring the people there. It helped China in that we could introduce them to the rest of the world, in a sense. And it opened up other doors because once you meet with the people there, new doors open up. In fact, the next time we talk, I'll talk about the invitation Mr. Armstrong got from one of the banquets we had there, and then that'll carry us into the next phase.
Okay, good. Well, we'll talk about that. This has just been very, very fascinating as a primary source, one who was the eyewitness of these events, and that's what we're interested in.
Well, thankfully, I began at age 21, so I'm still here. Almost all the people we met with have died, so it's nice to be a first-hand witness.
Well, it's nice to be able to share these stories here on podcasts like this. So we thank you for taking the time to talk to us today on Inside United. We thank our audience for joining us today on Inside United. Please come back weekly for our podcasts, and please be sure to tell your friends about our weekly podcast. You can easily find us on ucg.org. We're on the main menu. Click on podcast. We're also on Spotify. You can find us there under podcasts. Search for Inside United, or you can find us through your favorite Apple or Android podcasting app. Also, we'd love to hear from you, and you can write to us at podcast@ucg.org. podcast@ucg.org. We'd love to hear from you. So have a great week. We'll see you again soon.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.